Sadie, what is small, black, and yellow, and just like drops things all the time?
I don't know. What?
A fumblebee. But there's also one that like you have a really hard time understanding when they talk.
Yeah, that one's a mumblebee.
Yes, it is. It's a mumblebee.
And don't forget the one that's a gymnast. That's the tumblebee.
Or the one who's just always upset all the time. Just grumblebee.
Okay, we gotta stop this. This is Sadie Witkowski.
And this is Ian Martin.
And you're listening to Carry the Two, the podcast where I explore the wild, weird, wonderful world of math with my co-host Ian. We might seem like an odd duo tackling math research. After all, I'm a cognitive neuroscientist and Ian is a high school choir teacher. But I knew when I started this podcast, I wanted a partner in crime who's super curious about math, even if they haven't had a math class since high school.
All right, but rather than having a fabulous multi-hour conversation with terrible puns that I've just started myself, we're actually going to be talking about how honeybees decide on new locations for their hives.
I'll allow it.
Yeah, sorry.
It's easier to convince an applied mathematician to do some practical stuff than an engineer to do theoretical stuff.
So who's that?
That is mathematician Dario Bauso from the University of Groningen and the Jan C. Williams Center for Systems and Control.
I started as an engineer. I did aeronautical engineering, and I graduated in aeronautical engineering. And then during my PhD, I realized I did a thesis on automatic control, which is a branch of electronic engineering. So I was already moving to a different area. And it was quite technical. So automatic control is quite a technical area with a lot of... you need to use a lot of mathematical tools.
So we're talking with Dario about how we can use mathematical models to understand how a large group of individuals makes decisions, specifically how bees can come to a decision about where their new hive should, well, be. And it turns out this kind of modeling isn't just for insects. These same dynamics apply to everything from trying to get a group of friends to settle on a movie to watch to understanding how other people impact customers' product preferences. Did you spill your coffee? Are we okay?
Exactly. This is exactly what happens. So there's a tragedy at this precise moment. The tragedy is happening, but I still have to play the show. I think I'm very well. Yes. It's still there. Good.
As I said, this is Professor Dario Bauso. And before you ask, no, he hasn't always been into bees. He's more interested in the fundamental question of how a group of individuals comes to a decision and how those individuals can influence each other in decision making.
So sort of looking at like what goes on when people are trying to decide like where a group should go to dinner.
Yeah, and doesn't that always seem to happen where no one can make a choice? This is how Dario puts it.
So you have many people that have to make decisions and they have to agree on some common decision. And you have multiple options. And the critical aspect is that these options have the same value. Because if you discuss options with very different values, then to reach agreement is very easy because everybody recognizes, okay, option A is much better. But what if you have two options and they have the same value and still you have to convince all the people that A is better than B? Or B is better than A, so that's the interesting point.
Is he talking about making a choice when there isn't a clear difference in value, or like when it's more of a subjective decision?
He's talking about when both options are equally good, but you just have to make a decision.
Oh, okay, so like how the Cubs and the White Sox are equally good, or like deep dish and thin crust also aww, just as good. Or like, you know how like Lover is just as good as Taylor's other albums?
Yeah, okay, I'm not stepping in that minefield. Let's explain this whole idea of collective decision-making, sticking to our friendly neighborhood honeybees. Okay, so imagine you have a hive of bees that have outgrown their space.
Oh, they're getting busy over there. Get it? Like busy, like bees.
Ouch. Okay, well, let's just say they have quite the population growth. So the bees are looking for a new place to set up as home, and the hive sends out scout bees to look for new locations. And when they find a spot they like, they do this funny little movement called a waggle dance. It's basically a signal to all the other bees in the hive that they found a good option and that they're really excited about it. So it's a little come hither signal. At the other end of the spectrum, if a scout bee finds a location that they think is perfect, they can send a different negative signal to the other scout bees. Basically, they can get the other scout bees at the different location to stop their waggle dance. Here, I'll let Dario explain it.
This is about scouting bees. They go in exploration, and when they like a place, they stop there and they start these oscillatory movements. It's a signaling, this is a good place to the rest of the swarm. This is a good place. Why don't you come here and we have our nest here? At the same time, there are bees that are committed to another option. So they are scouting in other areas. They like other options, and they can send a signal to the waggle dancers in order to stop them from dancing. So this is what they call cross or stop signaling or cross inhibitory signaling.
Okay, so these scout bees can either entice their fellow honeybees to their option.
Yep, that's the waggle dance.
Or they can stop other scout bees from advertising their preferred option.
And that's the cross-inhibitory signaling. And let's not forget that most of the rest of the honeybee hive are in a third group. They're undecided, and they need to pick between the options.
Okay, so then how do they make a decision?
That's the big finding from Dario's research.
Actually, the main result is there exists a threshold. There exists a value. We can quantify. We can provide a quantity and say if the strength of the cross-inhibitory signal is above this value, then we observe the convergence to option A or B. Or if the strength of this cross-inhibitory signal is below this threshold, then we observe scenario one. So the first thing that, and this is also an advantage of using mathematical models, you have quantitative analysis. So you can provide a value, it's a function, that tells you, okay, in this case you converge, in this case you don't. So that's one of the main results.
A threshold?
Right. You have to remember this is actually a mathematical model that we're looking at and not real bees. Essentially, if you have bees that have a strong opinion about their new hive location, i.e. there's strong cross-inhibitory signaling, then that group will eventually converge and pick a new hive location. For the model, it doesn't actually matter if they pick spot A or spot B, just that they make a decision. But if the bees are below a certain threshold for cross-inhibitory signaling, i.e. they don't have such strong feelings about the new potential home, then you get lots of bouncing back and forth where they never settle on a location. The swarm gets stuck in limbo.
Okay, so this makes sense as a model, but can we say this is how it definitely works in real life? And does this kind of modeling only apply to bees, or is the same math at play when my friends and I are trying to decide like what to watch on Netflix?
These are all really great questions, and let's take a quick break and then we can get right back to that thought. If you're enjoying the important research shared on our show, there's another University of Chicago Podcast Network show that you should check out. It's called Entitled. Human rights matter, but conversations about rights can be polarizing, confusing, and frustrating. On Entitled, lawyers Claudia Flores and Tom Ginsberg traveled the world getting into the weeds of global human rights debates. They use that expertise to explore the stories and thorny questions around why rights matter and what's the matter with rights. Subscribe to Entitled, part of the award-winning University of Chicago Podcast Network.
Now that we're back, let's go over this again. So my understanding is that models sometimes don't actually reflect the real world, right? Like either because they're missing information or because there are incorrect assumptions or like a million other things, right?
Right. And in fact, Dario explained to me that you need to meet a certain threshold of strong cross-inhibitory signaling to get the bees to make a decision. But in Dario's model, you sometimes get this weird situation where the bees don't converge.
Don't converge?
Basically, they bounce or oscillate between the options and they never settle on one solution.
In technical jargon, I would call these bouncing like oscillations. You have oscillations. In a dynamical system, you can observe oscillations or limit cycles. But then in many applications, you never reach a steady state. So you keep bouncing from one solution to another one. So you observe these kind of limit cycles of oscillations. So stationary solutions are interesting, but sometimes they don't really capture accurately what really happens in a concrete application.
Like when everyone claims they don't care where we go for drinks and then we can never pick a bar to go to?
Yeah, you nailed it.
So that's an issue, obviously. But we didn't address the bigger question. How do we even know if this is a good model?
Yeah, that's where the rubber meets the road. You have to collect lots of data to see if your model actually predicts what's happening in the real world. What happens in that data, you know?
So has he talked to bee researchers? Like, has he collected data on how bees make decisions?
Unfortunately, no, but part of that is because of what he was inspired by. I mean, Dario's choice to focus on bees for this model was actually based on a paper he saw by some theoretical physicists. He was really inspired to think about how groups of people make decisions in all sorts of situations and wanted to use the simple toy model of Scout honeybees as a good place to start.
So that's, but the interesting thing is that if you do mathematical modeling, sometimes you realize that the same model, actually with slight variations, it could describe honeybees, but it could describe also marketing strategies, because the bees could be also customers. They have to buy a product, and you have other customers that try to influence your choice. Option one and B could be two different kind of phones or products. And then the waggle dance is somebody that tries to convince you with advertisement that product A is better than product B.
So now Dario is starting to look into how he can apply these same dynamics on humans and how we make decisions. Although with humans, there are also other elements that we have to consider.
So in most of the models I was studying, there is an assumption that all the bees can talk to all the bees. So there's no topology. There is no communication topology. And then the question was, in reality, especially if you want to extend this model to opinion dynamics or marketing, people have not all the same connection.
Wait, rewind. What does he mean by topology?
Good catch. So in math, topology is the study of geometric properties and spatial relations and how the properties are preserved, even under deformations. I know that still sounds like jargon, but think of topology like a sheet of rubber. No matter how you twist it or stretch it, the relationships between two points are preserved relative to the rest of the space. So we can also think of topology as like a network of connections between individuals, like those goofy string maps you see on CSI shows when they're hunting a killer. But Dario is basically saying that who has connections to who will impact whether a waggle dancer is actually able to convince just a few bees or almost the entire swarm.
So you have people that are very well connected, influencers, and you have people that have poor connections. So then the second question was, how can we revise this result in a scenario with a structured environment? By structured environment means when you have a communication topology. So then it's different when a waggle dancer is a bee which has a lot of connections, or is a bee with no connections. If a waggle dancer has no connections, then nobody will perceive the signal.
Okay, so he's saying in this bee study, he didn't look at topology, but that it matters when it comes to people?
Right, and it might matter for bees as well, but he wanted to start with a more simple model before layering topology on top of it.
Okay, it seems this work actually applies to a lot more cases than I expected when you said we were going to talk about bees.
I feel like this is actually one of the bigger challenges for Dario when it comes to his research. He feels like having a field of study that applies to everything means that people don't know how to categorize him or his work.
You know, we need to label people. So we need to associate to each scientist a kind of label and say, okay, this guy is doing this, this guy is doing that. But if you are very multidisciplinary, then people sometimes they it's not easy to attach a label to your kind of research areas.
I mean, I feel like he does a good job explaining his work though, right?
I agree. It's something that Dario is really conscientious about and tries to cultivate, and for good reason, with how multidisciplinary his work can be.
Actually, I do the constant exercise of trying to explain, which is also what's happening right now. So I like to try to explain what I'm doing in very simple terms, avoiding technical jargon, and which doesn't mean that the tools you are using, they are simple at all. But I think this should be an exercise that we should do, scientists should do much more often, to try to be capable of explaining what they're doing in very simple terms, try to also make reach a much broader audience. So this is, for historical reason, I had to do this on a daily basis, especially during my, when I was at the beginning of my career, because you know, in academia, you do your career if you get projects, if you get support from companies for your projects. And do you want to talk to companies about bifurcations, and they will run away immediately? So you still want your project to be funded, and so you need to be capable of explaining what's going on without making people run away.
So do you think he'll finally meet up with some beekeepers to test his models? I'm personally picturing Nick Cage at the end of The Wicker Man.
I think we need to follow up on this and find out.
Let's hope not, for his sake.
So to summarize, today's guest, Dario Basso, walked us through his research on modeling honeybees and how they select a new hive location. Through positive reinforcement, the waggle dance, and negative feedback, cross-inhibitory signaling, scout bees can try to convince the rest of the swarm to go with their preferred location. And Dario's model shows that when there's lots of this signaling, the bees come to a decision. But when there's less signaling, the bees aren't able to make a choice. Of course, this kind of mathematical model applies to a lot more than just bees, such as how influencers on social media try to sway folks to buy a product. So while it might feel fun to imagine a bunch of arguing scout bees, Dario's work shows this kind of math has massive applications outside of the biological realm.
So, Sadie, if there's a bee in my hand, what's in my eye?
I don't know.
Beauty. Because, like, beauty is in the eye of the bee holder.
See, I thought because you were holding the bee that there was definitely not a bee in your bonnet.
What?
You never heard that phrase?
Yeah, but that's a stretch.
Okay, we gotta cut this off. This is too far. Anyways, to wrap up, remember you can find our sources in the show notes as well as a transcript of today's episode, and that's located in the episode description on your podcast player. You can also find a few links with related research as well as the video of Dario Basso sharing his findings at the IMSI workshop, Mean Field Models for Interacting Agents. And be sure to check us out online at our homepage, imsi.institute. We're also on Twitter at imsi_institute, as well as Instagram at imsi.institute. That's IMSI spelled IMSI.
And do you have a burning math question? Maybe you have an idea for a story on how mathematics and statistics connect with the world around us. Send us an email with your idea.
You can send your feedback, ideas, and more to sadiewitt@imsi.institute. That's SADIEWIT at IMSI.institute.
We'd also like to thank our audio engineer, Tyler Dammy, for his production on this show. And music is from Blue Dot Sessions.
Lastly, Carry the Two is made possible by the Institute for Mathematical and Statistical Innovation, located on the gorgeous campus of the University of Chicago. We're supported by the National Science Foundation, the University of Chicago, Northwestern University, the University of Illinois at Chicago, and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Until next time.
Bye. What would bears be without bees?
Not Winnie the Pooh? I don't know.
Just ears.
All right, dear listeners, I'm going to save you from this. I'm going to use that.